So no matter what it is, we'll be the champions. Oklahoma, we've been it.
Excellence has been established by Coach Wilkinson, Coach Switzer, and Coach Stoops. It's my responsibility to defend that standard and to build upon that standard.
Welcome to the Oklahoma Drill Podcast with your hosts, Jesse Curtin-Biddle and Brian Clark.
Hello, Sooner Nation. OU Insider, subscribers, Coach Brian Clinton, enthusiasts, people who have learned way more about Venmo transactions and memo lines and conspiracies or controversies related to third-party money sharing and sending apps. This isn't the pod for you because, God, is there nothing I want to talk about less than that? But we are going to talk about OU football here on this installment of the Oklahoma Drill, a podcast fueled by OU Insider and On Three Rivals, I think is what we're called. Brian, I'm joined by you, as always, as we always are.
Always.
Brian, what did you learn about Venmo? Let's spend the next 50 minutes talking about Venmo. Doesn't that sound like a fantastic...
Sure,
podcast
yeah,
for you.
I'm here for it.
How much prison time should John Mateer get for those Venmos?
Well, it depends on if he won or lost the bet.
I didn't even think about that. If he won the bet, like no prison time or just less prison time?
Less.
If he won the bets.
Yeah.
This is all I want to say about that because I really don't want to talk about that. I cannot believe that Venmo transactions from almost 3 years ago
are a thing, yeah.
Was not only a thing, but that it prompted statements from both John Mateer and the university. Yeah. Like, that's the world, that's where we are in 2025. Nothing to me screamed more, can we get to football season, please, than
sure.
This thing.
Yeah.
Give me your, I'm dying to hear your thoughts about Venmo.
If anybody has ever used Venmo or Cash App with me, I picked this up somewhere along the way, but like every transaction that I do is not for drugs. So maybe not appropriate now that I'm a pastor, but like I have always, that's been mine. So like, I get the joke and I understand like it's something that we all do, but like, come on.
For one, I disagree that it's inappropriate because you are a pastor who is sending money that is not, in fact, for drugs.
Correct.
Which is befitting of a pastor. I will say, look, we're going to talk about actual football. I don't want to belittle the concerns that can come from student athletes gambling, particularly on their own sport. Do we have to say that? I understand.
No.
I understand that that's a thing. I understand that's a concern. Gambling is everywhere, almost annoyingly so, to me at least. You're only asking for controversies with the rise of gambling and how prevalent it is. But my God, that story, my goodness. Who was going through his Venmo from 3 years ago?
No idea.
Who has that time?
Not me.
I'm doing more important things with my life, Brian. Like, oh God, actually,
covering
when I started
the Sooners.
Covering that. Well, I was going to say, I started trying to think about my life and I was like, okay, well. Let's talk about actual football, please.
Yeah.
For the love of God. I published, for one, I'm going to give myself a shameless plug. I wrote a big story and published it this morning on Reggie Powers, second year defensive back, cheetah, linebacker, whatever you want to call him. It was a really, really long story. I talked to his former defensive coordinator at Centerville High School, John Puckett, who was incredible. Talked to his dad, Reggie Powers Sr., who is just an awesome stand-up guy, always has been. And just talking about how that versatility that he's had that's given him a name for himself at OU has been there since high school. And then even just the way he's grown through his first year and change at OU. My favorite thing, Brian, is Brent Venables. I had already talked to John Puckett, who had said, I remember before his sophomore year of high school, I remember thinking, we've just got to find somewhere for him on the field. He's mm-hmm. too good not to play every snap. And then Brent Venables, like 2 days later at his media availability, I'm there. And he says, I've told the coaching staff, get this guy on the field. And that just seems to be the sentiment for his coaches is, I don't know if he's a linebacker or a cornerback or a safety. All I know is I want that guy on the field. And that's what drew me to write about him.
Yeah. You, any time that you have a guy like that, regardless, especially in a role where he's playing a position that has so much versatility as it is, like the guy can find a spot on the field. And it sounds like he's going to be out there a lot, and probably a lot more than most people expected coming into the summer, which I'm excited about. I think it's going to be incredible.
Well, I've been telling some people that, like, if there's a list of five guys that OU fans like really need to become familiar with this fall, he's on that list. He's in that top five. And I felt comfortable writing about him because is he going to win a starting job? I don't know. It's not out of the question. He's been getting first team reps.
Yeah.
I've seen it. So I think there's real competition with him and Kendall Daniels at Cheetah. I think the competition between him and Peyton Bowen at strong safety is legitimate. They can put him anywhere on the field. Does that mean a starting job week one or at any point in the season? I don't know, but I'm pretty confident in saying he's a guy that's going to play real, meaningful, tangible snaps for this defense. And I think he's going to be a guy that, like, he'll play 25 snaps one game and nine of them were at Cheetah. And or like nine of them are in the box, seven of them are on the D line, eight of them are in the slot corner. Like that's the kind of guy that he's going to be. And OU needs second year guys like him to, especially in the secondary, to kind of emerge. But that's why I felt comfortable writing about him, is he's going to have a real role. Fans need to become familiar with him now.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. Well, and to just kind of segue off that, I have several questions just as your resident fan now. I mean, I'm still able to cover the team some, but I've got some questions not being at
phone a friend
camp. I want to be able to ask you on behalf of all of Sooner Nation. There are several things, and you mentioned Reggie Powers in the secondary. That's kind of where I want to start. There have been, from several different places, there's been buzz just that the secondary, while there haven't necessarily been, you know, there's a lot of it that's going to weigh on whether or not we have a healthy Gentry Williams out there this year. But it sounds like the secondary is actually playing some good ball. Like, there's a lot to be excited about in fall camp right now. What say you?
Yeah, I think coming into the fall, you knew that even if Gentry Williams is healthy, even if Eli Bowen is healthy, that, and obviously Eli Bowen hasn't been healthy to this point, that you were going to need a couple of second year guys. Like, even moving Kendall Dolby over to primarily cornerback, you're still going to need Devon Jordan, Jeremiah Newcomb, those type of guys to take real steps forward. I think that's happened. I think just watching them on the field, when you talk to people around the program, those two guys, and then I also want to throw in Cortland Guillory as three guys that I think are going to have real roles regardless of what the health situation is. Even Jeremiah Newcomb's even been getting some reps at Cheetah. It was so interesting to watch the linebackers go through drills during a practice last week, and it was Reggie Powers and Jeremiah Newcomb. It's like they were cycling in pairs of twos in the linebacker room with Coach Goodwin and Nate Drayling, and those are the two guys that are in the fold.
Wow.
And I think that speaks to, like, I would say, like, even if it doesn't translate into 60 snaps a game, I think Reggie Powers, Jeremiah Newcomb, and even Cortland Guillory to some extent are kind of in that, and Michael Boganowski a little bit are in that small group of guys that like OU is just trying to get them on the field.
Yeah.
Regardless of what that looks like. Having said that, for the sake of not needlessly sunshine pumping, I don't know. There's no way to feel amazing about that cornerback room right now, because regardless of all of that, unless one of those young cornerbacks really takes a step forward, like really takes a step forward, it all hinges on Eli Bowen. And while his injury is still not overly significant, I don't expect it to cost him like a serious amount of time. The whole thing becomes pretty fragile if he's not healthy, and he has not been fully healthy through fall camp, and that's not ideal. So I think that's I think there's been some positive developments, but I still think that cornerback room is still in the state of it hinges a lot on Eli Bowen getting healthy and Jinchy Williams staying healthy, and I don't know how you can feel perfect about either of those things right now. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's just a lot of unknown, I guess, is probably the best way of putting it. There's a lot of unknown behind those two guys. And look, I mean, the laundry list of injuries that we've seen Jinchy Williams have to overcome, like, it's well documented. So, like, health is going to be a concern at that position as well, you know, as much as any other. But from the sounds of it, at least you've got some guys that are coming into the fold that have really bright futures nonetheless. Sounds like they're making early pushes, which is great. That's what you want to hear. If you've got a group of 5, 6, 7 guys that the coaching staff feels that they can trust to throw out there, you'll take that every day.
Well, and I would say, I think OU can confidently say they've got 6 guys in that room that they're going to be okay to play when conference schedule starts. I think you've got Jinchy Williams, Eli Bowen, Kendall Dolby when he gets healthy. I'm really, man, because we haven't really got to watch Kendall Dolby on the field yet.
Yeah.
I'm just so interested to see, is he primarily playing corner? Are they still going to put him at Cheetah some, which I think they will. We just haven't seen it. But those 3 guys, Devon Jordan, Jeremiah Newcomb, Cortland, I think is you can confidently say is a group of 6. And on top of that, like, look, OU's lose. I mean, these guys, in terms of whether their production was good or not, is certainly debatable. But when you lose Kenai Walker, Des Malone, Woody Washington, those are guys that played a lot of snaps last year. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're going to naturally be replacing them with guys that are unknowns. I forgot to throw in Jacoby Johnson in that cornerback group as well. I should throw Jacoby Johnson in there as well. It's just, Jacoby is such an interesting guy to try to evaluate. We've talked about it a billion times, but it's just, I think if OU had their druthers and everything goes well, I think Jacoby Johnson would be the 3rd cornerback in that room.
Yeah.
It's just
from his, I mean, measurables. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
He probably has the most athletic upside in that room. It's it just hasn't all come together yet.
Right.
You know.
Okay, so let's kind of transition a little bit. My other question, something that is bugging me. So you think about the leadership, especially on the defensive side of the ball, that you lose from last year. You lose Danny Stutzman and Billy Bowman, both of those guys, obvious how much their leadership was important. RSJ is probably the first guy that comes to mind. So maybe another answer, but who, what guys have you seen step up as like vocal leaders on the defensive side of the ball that guys are going to rally around this year? Who is the guy that you've kind of seen at fall camp emerge as that guy?
My first thought, I mean, Robert Spears Jennings, who is not like the most vocal guy. Right. But when you talk to people, like it was interesting talking to Reggie Powers Sr. and him talking about how Robert Spears Jennings is not like a rah-rah guy, but he's the guy that when Reggie is like, I'm getting late night work off the field, it's always with RSJ.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the type of leader he is. Otherwise, I think Jinchi Williams is a guy that's really emerged. And then I think on the defensive line, it's R. Mason Thomas and Dominic Williams.
Okay.
Dominic Williams, I think, has really taken ownership of that defensive tackle room. I think they've pushed him to be that because the defensive tackle room last year was good. It was good. But one of the reasons why it wasn't elite, which, don't get me wrong, good in the SEC is good. That's great. But it wasn't elite because Dominic Williams wasn't quite the impact guy that OU kind of needed him to be. I think they've pushed him not only to kind of commit more, but to really take ownership room of that group because he's the guy to do it.
Yeah.
You know? I think it was interesting talking to Peyton Bowen on Monday and him talking about he's you know, all of a sudden he's a third year guy. It's so weird, right? Like it feels wild. Like Peyton Bowen's still a freshman. He's coming into his third year.
Yeah.
And really in that safety room, like it's Robert Spears Jennings is a fourth year guy. Peyton Bowen is a third year guy. And then the rest of the guys in that room are underclassmen, you know? So, I don't think you're going to have a clear, like Danny Stutzman is the leader of this defense type of guy. I think it's going to be a by committee kind of approach to this defense.
So John Mateer on the offensive side of the ball pretty clearly. And then everybody,
That's the one thing. John Mateer is the leader on offense that this team didn't have a year ago.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, and you mentioned Dominic, this doesn't have to be a real long answer, but like the defensive line is the hype reel. Like is the hype reel.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I want to say we talked a couple of weeks ago about like whether this defensive line can be a top five unit. I think we talked about that a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly what I said because I have the memory of a goldfish.
There we go.
But I do. I think the thing that has changed that for me a little bit is that I think not only Dominic Williams, I think emerging a little bit more as the leader that room like really, really needs. Mm-hmm. But the David Stone stuff, like being around him in practice is like a real, like, oh, that's an SEC interior defensive lineman. That's what that looks like. And then I think the only slight question mark I have is what that other defensive end spot looks like. But I feel pretty confident that Marvin Jones Jr., PJ Adibaura, Taylor Wine, Danny Okoye, one of those guys are going to emerge.
Yeah.
I wouldn't predict they're going to be the best defensive line in the SEC, but I do think they can be top five. And I think that ceiling is pretty attainable.
Yeah.
For this group. I do.
Sure. Awesome. Yeah. Well, and it feels like, I mean, if you've got a top five defensive line in the SEC, with Brent Venables calling the shots, and then the guys that you have in the secondary, and then you return a guy like Kip Lewis at linebacker and you feel good about the other parts around them. Like the unit as a whole could truly be elite.
I will say the linebacker room is one that I'm still just really, really interested in how that shakes out because I think like Kip Lewis is pretty safe at one of those linebacker spots. But like, I think the Kobe McKenzie, Sammy Omasego battle is going to go until right up to week one.
Yeah.
I mean, I really do. And then even at that cheetah spot, like I feel more confident now because Kendall Daniels was working some at traditional linebacker in the spring. He's been working a lot more at cheetah. I feel pretty confident he will be the starting cheetah, but I don't think they're just going to play him. Like, I think there's going to be lineups where it's like where OU's got Kendall Daniels and Reggie Powers and Kendall Dolby, like all on the field.
If there are opportunities to get Daniels in the box in a third down situation and have him be somebody that can you have to account for in the pass rush, he's going to be like that was when he was at his scariest at Oklahoma State. There are whenever he was able to disrupt and be in the box. I mean, you see it. Look at the guy. I mean, he's physically imposing. That's going to be something they use him to do. I'm excited just to see how it breaks out. But yeah, the ceiling for this group, just keeps kind of growing in my head. Just as far as how good the defense can be.
Standing next to Kendall Daniels, which like, look, I am far from.
Well, they called him the Predator coming. Like, yeah. He does it live up?
Yes. that- yes, it does. It does. Yeah. Which look like I am not the most physically imposing person. Breaking
Jesse,
news.
That's not true.
All 6'2", 180 pounds of me. I'm not the most physically imposing person. Most D1 athletes. Most SEC athletes. Most. Not all.
Not all.
You know, I go to the
good
gym.
Good looking guy. Yeah.
go to the gym sometimes. Most SEC athletes are noticeably bigger than I am. Breaking news. But there are some guys that are like, oh, that's why I'm not a Division I athlete, because I don't look like that. And Kendall Daniels is one of those guys. We got to talk to him. When was it? I think it was last week. And I think not only just how much he's grown physically since the spring, but I think like the only question about him was like buy-in, because that last year at OSU, the numbers were great. The effort wasn't.
The tape was
always.
Yeah.
But I think he's like clearly come in and be like, oh, I can start for a defense that could be really good. And I think the buy-in and all that stuff, I think, has definitely been there.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the side that everybody's, do you want to call it worried, anxious? The offense.
People are worried about the offense?
I mean.
After last year?
After last year, I think the expectation pretty clearly, things are going to be better. Because quite honestly, I don't want to say it can't get worse, because we played the can't get worse game for about 5 or 6 weeks into the SEC play, and it was awful.
It can always get worse.
It sure can. Yeah, it sure can. When we look at things, everything on the offensive side of the ball hinges on how good the offensive line ends up being. I mean, that's. I think if I was to say that Oklahoma ends up having, and again, I'm not making any predictions here, but if I was to say Oklahoma has a great offensive line, they're probably a playoff team, like just because of what the other pieces that are around them. Now, is that going to happen? I don't know. And I think it would be foolish to expect that. However, there are pieces there that you would feel confident in saying that they're going to be better than they were last year. How have you seen, let's kind of start at the tackle position. How have you seen things kind of progress with Sexton? And you hear about Michael Fasusi, obviously Derek Simmons on the other side. How have you kind of seen things play out in fall camp?
I think the biggest thing is that the Michael Fasusi, and I'll put Ryan Foje in that as well, but singling in on Fasusi, that hype is real. And talking to Bill Beedenbow on Monday was illuminating for a bunch of different reasons, because one of the reasons that it was so refreshing to talk to him, and why it's great to talk to him, because it was the first time in 2 years that Credential Media were able to talk to him. The reason why we wanted that is because he's a guy that he is the one coach that you know is not going to blow unnecessary smoke. Like, he's not. Like, if we asked him about Michael Fasusi, if Fasusi wasn't ready, he would tell us that. Fasusi's not ready. He's got to grow. He's got to develop. That is the opposite of what he said. He said he and Ryan Foje have earned the right to play. And I think when you talk to people internally, like, I think they're looking ahead as those are two guys that can play, that will play at some point. Now, I don't know if that means they're going to start. That tackle spot, like, I feel pretty confident saying Jacob Sexton and Derek Simmons are your starting tackles when everybody's healthy. I think That might be the other thing is like the Jacob Sexton, I think people, I don't know, forgot about him is the right word. Obviously, to this point, his career's been a little disappointing, right? Mm-hmm. Not in all, a lot of that isn't his fault. But he was a no doubt starter last year when he was healthy.
Right.
I think it's clear that that is still the case, at least going into week one. I think the least ideal thing about this offensive line so far is that there have been some bumps and bruises and particularly concussions, especially in that tackle room. So mm-hmm. like Fasusi's gotten some first team reps because Sexton and Derek Simmons are hurt and have been sitting out. I think that's great for him because I feel pretty confident that Fasusi's going to play meaningful snaps in at least one game, if not more than that. But I think there's definitely clarity in the amount of guys that OU feels good about, and especially in that tackle room when there were so many questions about what is that, how does that room actually shake out? Because you still got like Jake Taylor and Logan Howland and like other guys, right? I feel pretty confident it's Sexton and Simmons, and I think it's a testament to those guys that those are, as of now, the semi-locked-in starters because there's actual competition in that room.
Yeah. Well, and the difference for me, is, especially at the tackle spot, is last year the situation you're coming into, not that Heath Ozaida and not that Logan Howland isn't ready, it wasn't a high caliber recruit coming out of high school. That's not what I'm getting at. But the difference between those guys' physical development coming out of high school and where Michael Fasusi is right now, there's a gap. And if those are your inexperienced guys and you've got guys that were thrown into the fire and had some growth last year, like you're in a much better spot going into the year from an experience standpoint and a talent standpoint. So things would have to get better on at those spots. Let's kind of jump inside a little bit. Let's look at the guard spots. I'm curious, especially after what Beadmo had to say about Eddie Pierre-Louis, just that, you know, he likes his aggressiveness, but he wants him to be playing under control. You know, that's somebody that we've kind of heard some buzz about back and forth, but, it sounds like Fabetchi Nwiwu is playing his best football to this point. And then there are some other things we've heard about Heath Ozaida maybe pushing for. What do the guard spots look like? I think everybody's pretty confident that Fabetchi Nwiwu is going to be your right guard, as long as he's healthy. But what are the other things going on in that room?
Yeah, the Fabetchi stuff, I think, tracks with just, I think, something you could project pretty confidently before fall camp started. Mm-hmm. As much as he was, let's say, up and down last year.
Yeah,
that's a nice way to put it, right? Yeah. I think the biggest development in that room is that, like, Eddie Pierre-Louis, it's his job to lose at left guard. Mm. And I mean, it's striking to come out to practice number two, and Eddie Pierre-Louis is getting the first team reps at left guard. And then you watch a couple more practices, and that continues. Heath Ozaida, I think, has maybe made it slightly interesting. And Bill Beadmo even said that, you know, Ozaida and Howland missed the spring with injuries.
Right.
And they're just coming back. That I think they're happy with the way they've progressed from injury. Bill Beadmo is always going to value experience, and good or not, Heath Ozaida got a lot of experience last year. Yeah. But I think it's been refreshing not only to see, like, because the whole thing, what's the best way to put this? If OU's offensive line is going to be like good, not just passable, or obviously like not bad, like Eddie Pierre-Louis has to be really good because he just offers a ceiling that a lot of those other guys in that room just don't have.
Right.
And it's refreshing to hear Brent Venables talk all last year, all in the spring, about Eddie Pierre-Louis being a guy that they've been high on, but he got there in the summer last year. Mm-hmm. It just put him behind the eight ball. There's a ton of veterans in that room, right? Like, the pathway to playing time isn't there. And then at SEC Media Days, Eddie Pierre-Louis is the first guy he mentions when he's asked about underclassmen. And then you get out to practice, and who's taking a lot of the first team reps at left guard? It's Eddie Pierre-Louis. I do think, like, Ryan Foje is pretty clearly going to make the two deep at guard.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important development. But I mean, I feel pretty confident, let's say 80% confident, like right now, that the starting five on the offensive line is going to look something like Jacob Sexton, Eddie Pierre-Louis, Troy Everett, Fabechi Wiwu, Derek Simmons.
Yep. That sounds...
And that's a little different slightly than maybe I thought about it coming into the fall, but I feel pretty confident that that's what that five is going to look like. And I think unless Jake Mikla took a huge step forward, that might be, I don't know if best starting five, because that might end up including Michael Fasusi at some point, but that's probably your safest five in terms of giving you a good floor and some ceiling is probably what I would say.
Well, because Everett's up. I mean, I think that his size last year was something that a lot of people pointed to could be an issue. I mean, he's up over, what'd they say, 320? He's the biggest he's been, and there's been nothing but praise about him at center out of fall camp. So
yeah, it's been Beedenbo referred to him as like the clear leader of that group. Right. And I will say that might be the thing that's not surprised me, but the thing that's changed my perception the most is I came into fall camp thinking, I mean, and I'm not, I, Jake Mikla could end up really pushing, you know, there's still some time in fall camp, but like, I kind of thought things would gravitate towards Mikla taking that job. And now I'm thinking, I think it's Troy Everett's job to lose pretty clearly. I think.
Yeah. That's kind of what it sounds like, what it feels like. And maybe it's one of those things where having a guy like Mikla pushing him, cause there really wasn't somebody to really push last year, for that. So that, I think that helps a lot.
It does. And I would just say, I think fans' expectations of that starting five or not starting of the offensive line need to be, can it be a top half in of the SEC unit? I think don't get bogged down in can it be top three, top five, which I think a lot of OU fans are probably feeling. I don't know about you. What, I don't know. You're probably feeling anxious or nervous, especially with that group.
No, to be completely honest with you, regardless of what happened last year, I am choosing to remain trustworthy in Bill Beedenbo's and his ability to do what he does. I think last year was, there were just some, I mean, guys were playing injured almost all season long. And like, that's just part of it.
Right.
If you can go in and be, if you can go into that and be, you know, effective, whenever you're hurt, that's one thing, but like, there were just times when that wasn't the case. So,
And I think part of, like, it's not ideal that the offensive line is dealing with some bumps and bruises right now. It's not ideal, but I think they're also being overly cautious because I think OU's floor at offensive line is pretty okay if everybody's healthy. It's just, can everyone be healthy? That's like the one thing. I think if you have Jacob Sexton and Derek Simmons as your tackles, and like you've got Troy Everett as your center, and like everyone can stay, and those guys can stay healthy, I think the floor is fine. I think it's good.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and you're still playing a lot of good defensive line. I mean, there are some guys that you're not going to deal with that were, you know, first rounders last year, but it is the SEC still, and there's still going to be first rounders coming from the other side. So there's some work to be done. Let's kind of go, and I'll leave this part up to you. We've got skill guys left to talk about. I think we could probably start anywhere because all three of those spots outside of quarterback are pretty intriguing. But I think the biggest question mark on the roster, just as far as like who is going to be your starter, at least for me, is tight end. Who's going to be the starter in the tight end room? That's kind of my big question. What have you seen to this point? Here we are, August 13th. What have you seen to this point? Do you have any confidence in one guy over another?
Yeah, I would have actually said, and Parker, our colleague, Parker Thune, tried to give me not a warning, but like he told me to look for this. And then it was bearing out on the field. It's Caden Helms at tight end.
That's so awesome.
Yeah. It is like, honestly, like, it's one of those things, again, like, you cover a team. It's not about, like, try not to root for a team, but you root for players. And yes, he's the guy you root for. I was pretty confident it was going to be Carson Kent or Jaron Kanick. And then first week into fall camp, I'm like, oh, so it's going to be Caden Helms. Because I think he just offers more upside than those other guys do. And then even like watching the one-on-one drills a few days ago, and like to see the ease that, I can't even remember who was trying to defend Caden Helms, but like he just dusted him like it was nothing. You know, that's when I was like, oh, like sometimes you get so bogged down in guys that deal with injuries all the time that you forget like what they look like when they're healthy.
Yes.
It's like, oh, that's why he's at Oklahoma, because he can do things like that.
He can be a difference maker when he's healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So his hand injury, he's playing through it. He's practicing through it. He did break his hand. That's not ideal. Mm-hmm. And I will say, I think unless Caden Helms was just in another galaxy, apart from those other guys in that room, I'm also pretty confident in saying, even if Caden Helms is fully healthy, I think you've got a pretty clear top three of guys that are all going to get snaps. I think Kanick's going to get snaps. I think Carson Kent's going to get snaps. It was pretty interesting listening to Carson Kent on Monday talk about how Ben Arbuckle was really wanting to find ways to use that tight end room. Because if you watch that Washington State offense a year ago, and I know you know this, they did not use the tight end room a ton.
No, it was more of a gadget position almost.
Mm-hmm. Not a lot of 12 personnel in that team a year ago. I do think they want to run a little bit more of that. And I do think someone like Caden Helms, if he's healthy, can give them more flexibility to do that. Mm-hmm. But I think to answer your question, I don't know if there's going to be a guy in that room that takes 80 to 90% of the snaps. I think you're going to have a guy like Caden Helms who takes like half the snaps, and then the other snaps are going to be divided between guys like Kent, Kanick, and no tight end formations. That obviously could change.
Sure.
And we're still 2.5 weeks out from fall camp. But I will say, I think OU needed a guy to really emerge. I think it's been Caden Helms, but I think there's still going to be some by committee type of strategy to that room.
Well, and I love to hear that. I mean, just like you said, from covering, when you cover a team, you try to take the fandom out of it. But as far as liking, I mean, Helms has been through as much as any of these guys, you know, from an injury standpoint. So to hear that he is finally able to get to this point, you know, we're just, here we are, what, 17 days from game one, and he's playing some of his best ball, probably his best ball at OU. That's exciting. Let's go to the other pass catchers. Let's go to the wide receiver room. Satania's been like the name, mm-hmm, in fall camp, at least, that I've kind of heard, and I think everybody is hearing that same thing. But there's been some guys that have been missing a while and are starting to progress their way back onto the field. Outside of Satania, who has been maybe a guy that surprised you? I think we know what Burks is going to be if he's able to stay healthy, but maybe who are some other guys? I think Elijah Thomas is somebody that I'm really excited to see what he's able to do, but what have you seen?
I was going to say that there's two guys outside of Satania who's probably had the best fall in that wide receiver room, and I also feel vindicated because I've been telling people for a while, like, hey, don't, like, he's going to play a lot. They're going to need him.
He was in a bad passing offense. He is a lot better than the stats would suggest.
Yeah, so. he still caught more passes than any OU receiver did a year ago, which maybe says more about how depressing that offense was last year for OU, but still caught more passes than any receiver. The two names are Elijah Thomas and Keontez Lewis. And I'll be honest, with freshman receivers, you just, for one, you never know. And two, things could have been a lot different for OU if one of their freshman receivers was ready to play SEC football last year, and none of them were.
Yep.
Even as much as Zion Kearney has a moment here or there, Ivan Kerryon has a moment here and there.
The consistency,
like,
just, yeah.
Yeah. Like, you saw what it looks like when you rely on freshman receivers. Now, obviously, the OU's offense was just bad all the way around, so it's not indicative of them or their careers. Yeah, they're terrible. They're terrible. Get them off the team. Terrible. But it's just that's what it can also look like when you're playing a lot of freshman receivers. I think I'm pretty confident that Elijah Thomas is going to play in some form or fashion. Now, like, is that going to be closer to 10 snaps than it is to 50? Probably. But like, I think Elijah Thomas is I think he's going to play. I think they're going to find ways to like get him a snap here, a snap there, assuming everybody's healthy. I think he's going to be that guy. Keontez Lewis is, and I'll be honest, he was a late addition. I didn't think about him that much factoring in the wide receiver rotation. And maybe that's a short being short-sighted on my part, but I do think like when you think of guy, I think he is the epitome of like the cliche of when other guys are hurt, who steps up? And Keontae Lewis is probably taking better advantage of that than anybody in that receiver room. No Giovanni, no Jaden Gibson. I think he's the guy that has emerged the most. I still have question marks about that receiver room. I just do, because we don't really know what it looks like when Deion Burks is healthy. Not to mention, I think they're going to try to put him more on the perimeter this year. He can do that. Mm-hmm. He did that at Purdue, but we still don't really know what it looks like for him on an SEC field. How reliable can Satania be? Giovanni Gibson is probably the number one receiver in this room when he's healthy, but he's not fully healthy, right? I don't know where Jaden Gibson, what to expect from Jaden Gibson. Like, I have no idea.
That's a name that I almost have not heard in a while.
It's and
almost,
you were captain of Jaden Gibson Island.
Love you.
Reasonably. Well,
I was first mate. I would say you were captain of
actually,
that.
Yeah, we were both. We were both on Jaden Gibson Island for sure.
We would be fighting to be able to interview him after games. But that's a guy that I don't know, when you're dealing with injuries like he is right now. It's just hard to know what you're going to get out of a guy like that. So right now it sounds like there are other names kind of emerging because they have to. But I think if you had it your way, if you had it 100%, he would be on the field. Jaden Gibson would be. But
he would, but I will say, I mean, I think there's a reality where he gets healthy and it's just he's not in that top five or six. Because that top five or six fills up pretty quickly. Because, like, I'm pretty confident, like, Isaiah Satania and Deion Burks are two of your starters. Giovanni's your third starter if he's healthy. And then once you get into Zion Kearney, who I think is going to have a real role, Keontez Lewis, Elijah Thomas. Yeah. That's not even mentioning some of those. I mean, there's a lot of receivers in that room.
Yep.
I mean,
and we guys just that have been able to work through fall and summer.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what's holding Jaden Gibson back.
Yeah, and I just don't know how comfortable you're going to be. Like, are you going to take away snaps from Zion Kearney to give him to Jaden Gibson? I don't know. I think the best, I think one of the best versions of this offense includes a healthy Jaden Gibson on the field. I just don't know when that's going to happen or what it's going to look like if it does. I still have questions about what that I actually think the receiver room, almost more than any position group, might be the position group that goes through the most change in terms of what the starters look like or in terms of what the rotation looks like. Like, the rotation week one could look a lot different than it does week six, week seven.
So would you say that the movement of Burks to the outside is a byproduct of Satania being a guy in the slot that he is.
Yeah, I think it's
Yeah.
that, and also, I think like Burks is an interesting guy because he's like physically looks more like a slot,
Yes.
but I think some of
Skill
his
set what?
skill
Yeah.
set wise, he actually belongs more on the perimeter. And I think OU, both because the offense crumbled and the wide receiver room crumbled, and also trying to fit into Seth Luttrell's non-existent offensive scheme, I think they were trying to force him into that
Yeah.
slot. And
Got it.
I think he can do more. I think he can not only do more on the perimeter in Ben Arbuckle's offense, but I think Satania has just, he has grown both because of his skill set and because some of the injuries in that room. I think he's kind of become the go-to safety blanket for John Mateer.
Yeah.
And I think that just leaves Deion Burks to do more things outside of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's a problem. There's a lot of speed. There's a lot of speed to have to deal with.
Let me ask you this then, because
Let's hear it.
You have some more of a fan perspective, and maybe, you know, we can introduce this more into the pod than we have in the past.
I need
don't
to get a
like
hat to put on.
Yeah. I mean, you, what, how do you feel about where this team is at right now? And like from a fan perspective, like give me, if you're trying to like, cause it, fall camp is talking season. It always is.
Right.
And you, but it's also you're contrasting that with a 6-7 season, and you're coming into a year full of pressure. Where cautiously optimistic, fully optimistic, skeptical,
well,
neutral?
I mean, honestly, and I don't know if it's because expectations coming into the season are like at a, I mean, expectations are relative to success. So coming into the year, they're as low as they have been. I mean, this was as rough as it gets, and the schedule doesn't get any easier. I would actually argue that road games wise, it probably got harder overall. But for some reason, like it just feels, I and maybe it's just the narrative that OU's gone all in, and maybe like that, you know, I've bought into that a little bit. Something just tells me that this team is undervalued. I think that people look at OU, they see 6-7 last year, and they don't realize statistically how good the defense was, or would have been had they not been on the field as much as they were. A competent offense last year changes the outcome of the season. Just a competent one. One that's able to move the ball and stay on the field longer than three downs in a row. I honestly feel really good about things going into the year. I do. I think that is the way that with Brent Venables being able to do what he is comfortable with, what he's known, what he's had success doing. I don't think there's anything wrong with a guy like Brent, who has spent his entire career up to becoming a head coach calling defense. I think if you truly have what everybody is comparing Ben Arbuckle to, if you have that level of talent coming in as from a play calling perspective, you have to feel really good about. I mean, if I would have told you 3 years ago that you have the next Lincoln Riley savant calling offense and Brent Venables calling your defense, you feel pretty good about that. Like,
those aren't your words. Those are Bill. Yeah. I mean, that's Bill Beanbow.
Yeah.
Directly said, it was actually funny to hear him say, people aren't going to want to hear
aren't
it.
Aren't going to like it. Right.
Yeah. Lincoln Riley.
Yeah.
And that's when I started looking at like, okay, just for a second, like I started looking, I looked at all the offensive stats for OU during Lincoln Riley's tenure. And look, I understand he came into a program with a ton of talent. Was he riding Bob Stoops' coattails? I don't, let's just, we're just looking at numbers.
Yes, he was as of Sorry, the fan came out.
That's
put him back in the box.
We'll have to do like a 30-second fan moment every pod.
There we go.
I mean, OU's offensive numbers were just outstanding. I mean, like, just take away the frustration with Lincoln Riley's exit, the being so close memes and all that stuff. Like,
and the brisket. Don't forget the brisket.
Don't forget the brisket. God, that made me want brisket when you said that. Damn it, Brian. The offenses were good, man. And yeah. I think, like, think about the perception of Lincoln Riley 10 years ago, and that actually paid off. Like, this whiz kid from a non-power four school is coming to the, big leagues. He's going to make it big, Brian. And then he did. Like, yeah. The offensive numbers were top 10 in scoring every single year that Lincoln Riley was at Oklahoma. And I don't just brush that off. Yeah. And if Bill Beedenbow is making that comparison, all of that is to say, like, I will say that when I compare covering this team right now to a year ago, like, not even trying to sell people on optimism or over positivity or anything, like, mm-hmm. to me, judging it on last year, talking to people, being around the team into this year, the vibes are different. And I think just the pathway to a good year is very clear. Have a good offensive identity that bears a good offense. It does not have to be top 10. It doesn't have to be top 25.
But it's going to be, Jesse. It's going to be top 10.
You said it. I didn't say it. You said it. You freaking said it. The pathway is, like, clearly there. Yeah. For the defense to be as good as it was last year, if not better, but at least as good, and the offense to have overall cohesion and better injury luck, that alone could bear out 9-3.
Yeah.
Pretty easily. I'm not saying it will, but it could. And I will say, I think even when I talk to some of the other beat reporters, I do think there are actually people who are like, is this team actually going to be good? I think there are, like, genuine questions and discussions like that.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Well, I mean, because here's the thing. Like, the schedule is brutal. It's brutal. It's, like, after Texas, it's rough. However, a good team, if Oklahoma is a good team, those are all probably going to be one-score games going into the fourth quarter. Like, if the other teams end up being what people expect them to be. Tennessee may not be as good as people think they're going to be. Ole Miss may not be as good as people think that they're going to be. There's a lot of turnover and carryover.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, I think if the offense genuinely was top 10, like, which I'm not expecting that at all. If it was top 10, you're talking about a dangerous, like a truly dangerous team. But a top 25 offense, which I think you could hope for, I wouldn't say expect, but that could be something that you look to happen. I mean, yeah, I don't see any reason why 9-3 or 10-2 isn't attainable. It's not, you have to stay healthy though. Like that's where it all starts.
Well, that, and I will also say, I think any fans that have been concerned about the injuries and stuff that have happened so far, I wouldn't be significantly concerned about any injuries that have happened.
It is over being overly cautious, and yes. I think it's a good pointer and a good example of, hey, this staff is figured out, hey, maybe we should change the way we're doing some things because this was not good last year.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the last thing I'll say is could the offense be top 10? Sure, that could happen. I do think that's going to have, like, I think even to be a top 25 offense, you're going to need the offensive line to be, like, way, way better than a year ago. Like, mm-hmm. night and day better. And then you're going to need Jay Knott to be fully healthy. You're going to need that receiver core to, like, be really, really, like, there's a lot that goes into a top 10 offense, top 25 offense. And that starts up front.
Right.
Everything starts up front. So all that is to say, I still think this is going to be a team that wins on defense. I think this is still going to be a team. Like I'm pretty optimistic that this defense can actually be better than it was a year ago. The thing is, I think to me, it's about can the offense be cohesive enough and have its own moments of not only good moments, explosive moments, but also just not have so many mistakes. Like, can the offense just be good at generating some good plays and not turning the ball over?
And maybe whenever I say, I probably should have prefaced this. Whenever I say top 25 offense, top 10 offense, I don't mean total yards, points scored. I'm talking about efficiency. When you need to run the football, when you need to be able to chew the clock, like this team is not going to go out and score 40 points a game. It's not, that's not going to happen. Like if it did, awesome, but like not an expectation. But if you need 27 or 30 and your defense is giving you enough opportunities, like it's all, this is where having efficient play on both sides of the ball comes into play. If you're efficient on defense and then offense can take some time off of the clock, and really churn out points and put the pressure on the other sideline, it makes a huge difference because we saw what happened when that wasn't the case last year.
Well, and that's why there's all kinds of moments that you can point to last year, right? Just think about the defense forcing a fumble against Tennessee, recovering a fumble inside the 10 last year. Then Jackson Arnold immediately gives it back, right? Or even the Missouri game where Arnold fumbles late, and actually that there were so many issues in that Missouri game. Think about Ole Miss in the second half. Think about Ole Miss that whole game. OU had trips inside the 10. They didn't capitalize. Just bad mistakes. Like, you just need an offense that doesn't do that stuff. You need an offense that when your defense creates that opportunity, that the offense can score inside the 10 at home. You can do that. Like, I'm pretty confident the offense will be a lot better just as a baseline.
Yeah.
But is it going to happen? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think given all the problems with last year's offense, is it safe to say that the floor of this offense is the ceiling of last year's squad?
The floor?
Yeah, because it feels like the floor of this team offensively might be what the best of what we saw last year offensively. I mean, let's like take the main game out of it. Like throw that away. I
was
trying to think
what was the ceiling of that offense.
What we like the best we Bama? Saw this the best that we saw. Yes, probably.
That scored two offensive touchdowns?
Correct. That's like the floor of this team is better than that. It's not a high bar. Don't
better hope so.
So that's we're talking. Yeah, I mean it's just a totally different. Yeah.
Assuming the wide receiver room and offensive line rooms don't die again like they did last year. I would hope that the floor of this offense is better than like the 121st best offense or whatever the hell it was last year.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I think this offense is a baseline because of the cohesion that John Mateer and Ben Arbuckle bring.
Yeah.
Because I think there's more talent on the offensive line, because Jaden Nott, I think, is a real difference maker at running back. I think like all of those things represent, like, I think if everything goes well, I'm pretty confident in saying this offense, the baseline of this offense is like an average offense, like somewhere like ninth in the SEC in the 50s nationally, I think is like a good baseline for this team. Could it be worse or better than that? Like, sure. Like, absolutely. Well,
and we didn't even get to talk about this, but your backfield, if healthy, might be the best in the country. Like, 1-2 punch. Mateer and Ott is just...
Well, and also, Javonte Barnes has probably had one of the best five individual fall camps.
Oh, write it down.
So... and that's big because Jaden Nott's been hurt. So, I think the ceiling is a lot higher than that.
Yeah.
But We're gonna have to. We got 17 days. We got 17
yep.
days, Brian.
That's right.
That's gonna do it for us here on this episode of the Oklahoma Drill. Appreciate everybody tuning in. As always, appreciate Pastor and Brother Brian making some time in his busy schedule again for this episode of the Oklahoma Drill. Make sure to like and subscribe here at this OU Insider YouTube channel. You can get us anywhere you get your podcasts, I think. You can become a VIP member over at OU Insider. We have a URL with On3, a new one. I can't remember what it is, but search OU Insider. You'll probably find it, probably. But appreciate you guys tuning in. As always, we'll be back next week for another installment of the Oklahoma Drill. Until then, you guys take care.